The Emmy Award-winning documentary series Making a Murderer brought international attention to a homicide case in Wisconsin. Stephen Avery and Brandon Dassey are serving prison sentences for the 2005 murder of a photographer, Teresa Halbach. The 10-part series paints a picture of what some say was severe misconduct by investigators. And it also raises questions about the fairness of the convictions. Now, this is not the first controversy surrounding a case involving Stephen Avery.
DNA evidence exonerated Stephen Avery back in 2003, 18 years after going to prison for a rape he did not commit.
There isn't one iota of physical evidence in this case that connects Stephen Avery to it.
But 2 years into his freedom, Avery became the focus of the murder investigation of photographer Teresa Halbach.
And the evidence that we've collected is leading us to that of a human person.
Ironically, Halbach's last stop Monday was at Stephen Avery's home.
Halbach's car with Avery's blood in it was discovered in his family's salvage yard. Her cremated remains were found steps from his trailer.
So you're telling me somebody planted the body?
I didn't do it.
Avery's defense argued some investigators who helped wrongfully convict him for rape planted evidence and forced Avery's learning disabled nephew, Brendan Dassey, into a false confession.
Who shot her in the head?
He did.
Why didn't you tell us that?
Because I couldn't think of it.
It's not a documentary at all. It's a advocacy piece.
Former District Attorney Ken Kratz told CBS this morning the series ignores incriminating evidence that was presented in the trial.
It does very little to help the search for the truth. That's a function that is uniquely given to jurors, and the jurors did that when they returned their verdicts.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Stephen A. Avery, guilty of first-degree intentional homicide.
We spoke to Avery's former defense lawyers in 2016.
Are both of you convinced of his innocence?
I'm not convinced of his guilt.
You're saying there is some doubt in your mind?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And if it was okay to convict people on maybes, I wouldn't be worried about this, but it's not.
Forbes called the documentary Netflix's most significant show ever. Part two picks up with Stephen Avery and Brendan Dassey's post-conviction legal fight. Viewers are also introduced to Avery's new high-profile attorney. Her name is Kathleen Zellner.
Every crime makes sense. Every crime can be unraveled. You can figure it out. You have to understand the victim. You have to understand the nature of the crime. And you must understand in intimate detail the crime scene. And I don't think any of that was done in this case.
Filmmakers Laura Ricciardi and Moira Demos join us at the table to discuss. Good to see you guys.
Thank you.
I'm curious about part two because they had both been convicted. Their appeals have been overturned. Why would you even think there is a part two to this case, Laura?
Well, we knew that both Stephen and Brendan, although they're serving life in prison, Stephen without the possibility of parole, Brendan will be eligible for parole in 2048 at the age of 59. They continue to maintain their innocence, and they're committed to fighting to free themselves and clear their names.
Were you planning to always do a part two?
No. It's definitely something that evolved.
Yeah. How did it evolve? What did you see that you thought, okay, we need to keep going? Moira?
So, you know, when we leave off at the end of part one, you know, Stephen himself is saying he's going to keep fighting. Brendan's team has actually just taken his case into the federal court system. And then soon after the launch of part one, Stephen got a new advocate, Kathleen Zellner.
Who has an incredible record.
She does. Yeah. She's the winningest private post-conviction attorney in the United States. And so right there, it was clear, you know, the story really is not over.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as we learned that and thought about this post-conviction phase of the process, which is really kind of a black hole to most people, like what exactly does that mean to appeal? What are the obstacles? What are the stakes? Mm-hmm. What are your chances? So we saw it as an opportunity to, you know, offer viewers something new.
Mm-hmm. And part one, as popular as it was, didn't go without criticism and controversy. Mm-hmm. There had been accusations of it being one-sided, right, that you didn't get enough information in time with the prosecutor. Do we see more of that from the prosecution side in part two?
I mean, frankly, we gave the prosecutor whatever airtime was available to us. I mean, we looked for creative ways to include the point of view of the prosecutor who declined to sit down with us. I had written to Ken Kratz in 2006 to invite him to participate. Never received a direct response to my letter. But, you know, we were fortunate in that so many events were playing out publicly, so we could film those and, you know, make it clear what Ken Kratz's perspective was on the story.
Mentally, when you think about it, though, do you think about it as a documentary where you're trying to put things before people with no fingerprints of your own on it, or do you think of it as a storytelling exercise in which you're basically advocating for an argument?
I think the answer might be neither, you know, because documentary is not journalism. It is an art form. And, you know, this is a narrative documentary. So we had chosen Stephen Avery as our main character, and we had chosen him because of his incredibly unique status as someone who had been failed by the system in the mid-'80s and now was stepping back into it. You know, and in that 20-year time span, you know, there had been advances in DNA. There had been legislative reforms, and there was a lot of talk about, you know,
because he had been falsely accused before.
And falsely imprisoned for 18 years.
Yes.
And so it was sort of an opportunity to hold a mirror up and to watch the investigation and the prosecution play out. And the question at hand was, how will he be treated as an accused?
One of the other criticisms, guys, was about the victim. We don't hear much in part one about Teresa Halbach. You know, a woman lost her life under still mysterious circumstances, some say. Is she addressed at all in part two?
Absolutely. I mean,
do we hear from her family or?
Well, both in part one and part two, we invited the Halbachs to participate, and in both instances, they declined. And, you know, I just want to say we absolutely understand that. I mean, they endured an unspeakable tragedy, and, you know, I would imagine, too, that even participating could, you know, create more pain for them. So we understand that they declined. We respect that. And we, in light of that, I mean, regardless of whether they participated or not, our job was to tell the story in the most responsible way that we could. So we sought to include a range of voices. When the Halbachs declined to participate, we used archival materials to show, you know, the distress people were in when they thought that Teresa was in jeopardy just when she was missing. There were volunteer searchers who set out to look for her.
Well, you had a lot of people talking after part one, and a lot more people, and I'm sure, will be talking and watching part two. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.